everybody. We're so excited today to be here at the Hallmarkies podcast. And this is our third episode of our new top five show where we talk about all different kinds of films, not just Hallmark films, but we pick a topic and we bring in some fun guests and we talk about five films that fit that topic. And it's been really fun so far. We have done sports. And we did movies to watch on Valentine's Day, and that was really fun. And I'm so excited today because we are, in honor of When Calls the Heart, we are talking about what I call period piece movies. So the rule for this podcast is that you had to pick any film that was 1950, set in 1950 or before. So that was what we decided, and it's going to be really fun to talk about. And I have special guests today. I have two sisters that are known on Twitter as the Sanderson sisters, and it's Ginny and Laura are here, and this can be so much fun. Thanks so much, ladies, for joining me.
No, thanks so much for having us.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
You want to go, Jen?
Yes. Well, I'm a lawyer by day and just super Hallmark fan by night. And
yes.
For long-time listeners of your podcast, we may be the original listeners.
Yes. I don't know. But I think since the inception, we've been listening. And, I'm Laura. I'm the younger sister. We actually have a middle sister in between who's just too cute for us. So, no. And I am basically a stay-at-home mom, but I'm also a freelance writer. I used to be a journalist. And again, we grew up on Hallmark movies. We've been watching them, and we both like to write, and we decided why not channel that towards Hallmark. So we've been writing scripts with Hallmark in mind, and we're kind of shopping them around right now. And we're hoping that eventually we'll make it to a Hallmark channel near you.
Oh my gosh, that's so cool. How fun.
Super fun.
Wish that my sisters liked Hallmark. Oh my gosh.
You can just be honorary sister. You really can.
Yes. Oh, good. Yes. Well, that's really cool. So where are you guys from?
We're in Portland, Oregon right now.
Oh, great. My brother and his family live in Portland.
Awesome.
Yeah. I haven't actually been there, but I want to go eventually and see it. But yeah, my brother is like the classic Portlandite guy. Uh-huh. He's got the long beard and the...
Yes. Portland stereotypes are true, but it's so beautiful, and it's a really fun place to live. We've enjoyed it. So I moved up here first, and I managed to convince like most of the family to follow.
Oh,
so we grew up in Phoenix, though. Very different, but we were ready to go for a different climate.
Yeah. So you got tired of all that sun.
Yes.
And wanted some rain all the time. Don't mind. Yeah. Very cool. Yeah. So did you guys grew up watching Hallmark?
Yes. Like clear. Cause we're old. So clear back in the day when there wasn't even a Hallmark channel and you just had to wait for those like few gems of Hallmark Hall of Fame productions.
Yes.
On the major networks.
Yeah.
And then we've gotten into all of the current ones, and I don't think we've missed one in a couple of years. And we've even dissected them down to a spreadsheet where we chart every act and what happens.
Oh my gosh.
So
we haven't done that for all of them.
No, not all of them. It takes the fun out if you do it to too many.
Wow, that's really cool. Do you have a favorite?
Oh, a favorite.
We're going to talk about one of our favorites.
We are going to talk about one of our older favorites of current ones. I mean, you really can't beat some of the Nine Lives of Christmas, Window Wonderland. I mean, there's some classics, right? I'm trying to think of a recent one that I really enjoyed. I'm really enjoying the new mysteries. We also love the Mystery Channel. So all of the new mysteries that have come out.
The mysteries, I've warmed up to them a little bit. I realized that I think I like sort of the little bit more silly ones, probably better than the really serious ones. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, I wasn't a big fan of the Haley Dean, even though I love Kelly Martin. But I don't know, like, I liked this recent Emma Fielding one because it was just nutty. Like,
it was pretty nutty. I liked it too.
Like, I loved those like pedantic professors that were like, they were really funny. And I don't know, sometimes the ones that are super serious and we're like, we're really solving crime are just a little too boring for me. So I don't know. It's interesting.
That's why garage sale mystery sometimes can be so much fun. I don't think I expected it to be as fun as it is, but it's just, you know, find a dead body, go home and make lasagna.
Right. Yeah, I think it's by far the best series, The Gressel Mysteries for sure. My favorites, I really love Trading Christmas. Do you have a favorite Christmas one? I guess you said Nine Lives.
We love Trading Christmas. Yes. We love that one.
I watch it a couple times each Christmas.
Yeah.
This most recent Christmas, my favorite was Shoe Attic.
That was top for me too. But I enjoyed a couple. I thought Road to Christmas was fun. Yeah. There were a few different ones. Of course, now I'm blanking on like
those
all the.
Those were my two favorite.
But I watched them all.
Yeah. Yeah, those are my two favorite. Also, Road to Christmas was my favorite. Yeah, and then Shoe Addicts was my second because I don't know. I just thought they were the most well written and engaging, and I don't know. Really enjoyed. I knew I would like Shoe Addicts because I really liked the book, and then it proved to be. I think they did a really good job, but yeah, it was an interesting season. Christmas season this last
year. Winterfest, I really brought it, so I felt like
I've almost always liked Winterfest because I love the Birthday Wish. That's one of my favorites.
Such a good one.
Oh, it's so good. And then One Winter Weekend and One Winter Proposal, amazing.
Yes,
so
that one also has my husband's stamp of approval. Loves those.
Oh really, he liked them? Oh, that's good.
I'll watch this one again.
Yeah So what for you guys is the appeal of Hallmark in general for you?
For me, the appeal is that I can watch it with friends. I can watch it with my mom. You can watch it with any audience and you're not really worried about, people being offended by the content or even those who might have more of like a kind of a highbrow taste. I think they appreciate Hallmark. It's like comfort food television, it's something you can put on and within a few minutes you're in the story, even if you told yourself that you weren't going to be. And that's what I like about it. It's not something you have to think about too much when you're watching. It's something that really helps you relax and just like be in another person's world for 2 hours.
Yeah. I really think cozy lifestyle is kind of something some of us pursue, maybe some more than others. And that's what it is. It's so cozy. Even when it's a mystery, even when it's, a holiday type thing, there's something about it that's just so enjoyable.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think they are just sweet and you can watch them with their whole family and people will call out the tropes and stuff. And I'm like, that's what makes it fun.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And that's not a bad thing. I mean, and then some of them don't do it well. Some of them lean on the trope too much, but I don't know. Like it's nice sometimes too. It's cool to see something really, really original, but it's also really fun to watch something that takes a formula, but then does it really well and has good chemistry. And yeah.
Yes. That's been our goal with writing is we're really trying to go where we embrace the fun tropes, get rid of maybe some of the tired ones, and then also just kind of add a little bit of a fresh spin. We're not trying to reinvent the wheel. We really just want to give you the best of Hallmark. So we've tried hard to hit that sweet spot.
Who would be in your Hallmark movie, who would be your kind of dream cast?
Oh boy. Well, we were talking about, I'm working on something. I was like, this is a Paul Campbell. This was a Paul Campbell. Yeah. There's no way around it. It has a little bit of a goofy edge. And I'm like, he'd be good for that.
I've really turned into a Candace Cameron Bure fan.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wasn't one who like really grew up like loving Full House or something like that. I just think that she has got both dramatic chops and comedic skills. And that's what sets her performance apart. And I believe her as a businesswoman who's trying to take over an Alaskan lodge. And I also believe her as, a girl who works at a department store who's struggling to get her life together.
Right. I mean, I love so many. And then we've seen some more leading ladies too in the last little bit. And I've seen a lot of ones that I thought, okay, I see where this is headed. I like it. I like Mark Lucas. I think he always makes a great leading man, right? I like that he's more of your brawny leading man, but there's all kinds of, great leads on Hallmark.
Well, when we see your CCB Paul Campbell movie, really exciting.
Yes. If you're listening, call me.
Yeah, that's right. Well, this is really cool. So, yes, do you guys watch When Calls the Heart?
I do.
I've watched some, but she's made it all the way through. I haven't quite caught up.
It's something my mom's really into it, and so we tried to get together and watch it. We have not. We only made it halfway through last week's episode, though. So don't quiz me.
Did you get interrupted?
Yeah, it was Oscars night. There was a lot going on.
Oh yeah, it was my finest hour of live tweeting that I've ever done. Hours, I should say. Yeah, it was pretty amazing. I had the Oscars on the TV, and I was watching and I was live tweeting the Chronicle Mysteries. So I was literally live tweeting both at the same time. Wow. And I think they were both pretty solid threads. I feel like
you are truly a Renaissance woman. I have noticed that. I'm like, does she have extra hours in her day because she sees it all, tweets it all, and still has time for life on the side?
Well, it's called insomnia, and it's not fun. But yeah, I could only do that with watching one. If one of them was like nonfiction, you know, had no, like the fact the Oscars. Sure. I just have to look up and be like, oh, look, so-and-so won, yay. Uh-huh. And so, but it was pretty good.
I'm impressed.
But anyway, so yeah, Wind Falls of the Heart, I like it fine. I enjoy it. I think the premiere was really strong this last week. And so, you know, I enjoyed that and looking forward to episode 2. There's something about the Hallmark formula that to me is more palatable in a 2-hour movie than a series. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's fine. My favorite is The Good Witch of all the series, but
yes, that's a great one.
Yeah. Cause I love Catherine Disher so much.
And that one has the whimsy. I like my Hallmark with the side of whimsy.
Yeah. I think that's what makes it fun. And they all have such great chemistry.
Yeah.
On that show, and sometimes Wind Falls of the Heart can be a little slow for me, but I do like the kids, and I love Rosemary and Leland are great. I think Aaron Krakow is great, but I'm kind of excited to see what happens without Jack. So
I agree.
Yeah,
we all miss Jack, but it's going to be like a breath of fresh air in the series.
Yeah, for sure. All right. So in honor of When Falls the Heart, I thought it would be fun to do this episode on period pieces. And I've always been a big fan of royalty movies as far as like old school kind of movies. I really love Jane Austen. I love Dickens. I love the novels. Plus I love, you know, adaptations and so I don't know, I thought this would be kind of a fun topic. And did you guys have any kind of surprises or anything? How do you feel about your list, your lists, I should say?
I think one thing we're worried about is that our lists are too similar, and that they're pieces
having grown up in the same house,
yeah, from a very specific period. And we do not have any sort of like ancient, like biblical times on this. It's all pretty much 18th century and more. Yeah.
Oh, good. Well, I think we're going to have some nice variety. And I think sometimes these movies get a rap for being a little dry, a little boring. But what in your mind makes for a good period piece movie?
I really think that it's similar to Hallmark. I think what you're looking for is that kind of instant connection romance, you know. Sometimes it's that first frenemy situation where they hate each other so much that they begin to love each other. Other times it's a forbidden kind of love where people aren't expecting them to. And it's beautiful, it's simple, and it's really swoony.
Yeah.
And that's what I love in a period piece. I mean, there's some that deal with hard issues, and we didn't really touch on those because those aren't as rewatchable for me.
Uh-huh.
But I do love a period piece with just a great romance that just kind of defies the odds of society. Mm-hmm.
And for me, on top of that, I would say I want a strong female lead, society as the antagonist, and also great costumes.
Because
I half watch them for the costumes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and there's sometimes I feel like the sort of rules of these different time periods can add sort of a layer and make it more interesting than, you know, like we're familiar with our rules and with our customs and way of life and stuff. So to go back to a, you know, Jane Austen, for instance, where they have all of these rules of etiquette and kind of how they're supposed to behave, it's kind of, I don't know, it's just really fun.
Yeah. And I long for the simplicity when they just like cross stitch for an hour or play the organ. I think, yeah, I'd like this. I know there were terrible parts to it, but
yeah,
that appeals to me.
Well, yeah, that's very true. Because I've always said, people are like, if you could live in a movie, which one would you pick? And people are picking like the Avengers and stuff. I'm like, I don't want to live in that. Are you crazy? And so, but I always pick Pride and Prejudice because it's like, what's the worst that can happen to you? You, you know, have to apologize for insulting somebody at lunch. Like,
yes.
I love the fact that in that day and era, there was always something nice that you could say about anything. Cause you could always ask about a person's mother, how their health is. They should talk about the weather. And now it seems like that's people just don't even care anymore.
Miss those pleasantries.
Yes, that's right. So very good. Well, I'm excited to see what you guys came up with. Well, so mine really aren't in like a 1 to 5 order. It's okay. Just 5 that I really like. And I had a ton on my honorable mentions list because this is definitely one of my favorite genres, if you can call it that, of film. But I finally went for my number 5. I went with the movie Love and Friendship. And this movie is based on an obscure novel. It's novella, really, from Jane Austen, called Lady Susan. It's sort of interesting because she has another novella called Love and Friendship, but this one is actually Lady Susan, but they called it Love and Friendship, so it's a little confusing. But what I loved about this movie is it's directed and written, adapted by Whit Stillman, and he's such a great director when it comes to dialogue and writing female characters. And I like the fact that Lady Susan, played by Kate Beckinsale, is kind of a jerk, kind of a terrible person when you break it down, but like nothing that she does is really hurting anybody that much because she's just the smartest person in the room at all times. And I particularly loved any interactions with her and Chloe Sevigny, who plays this American friend of hers, and it was just hilarious. This movie is definitely, in my opinion, the funniest Jane Austen movie. And like, I just love the fact that her husband is always, Sevigny's husband is always telling her that she can't meet with Lady Susan anymore. It's just like, my husband says I can no longer be, you know, and she's just, like I said, always the smartest person in the room. Like, she manipulates people, but in the end, she manipulates them to a happy place. So you can't really be mad at her. And so you just laugh. And I love all the little performances and, you know, as far as costumes and everything, it's all really strong there. And it's just kind of this interesting heroine, I feel like, for Jane Austen, that's unlikable, but like smart and funny. And so you end up rooting for her, even though, you know, she's kind of a jerk. I really love that one.
Awesome. Great.
Have you had the chance, have you guys gotten to see that?
I believe that I have seen it, but as you're describing it, I realize it's time for another look.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen it, but when you describe it, it sounds just like something I would want to watch. So yeah. I'm going to have to look into that.
Yeah, you should definitely check it out. I thought it was really, really funny. And it helped when I first saw it. I saw X-Men Apocalypse, which was a movie I loathe. I really was not for me. And then I saw Alice Through the Looking Glass the same weekend, and then I saw Love and Friendship, and I was just like, this movie's amazing. renewed my faith in film.
Take me away, movie.
Yes, because I was not a big fan of either of those other two films, but I just really enjoyed it. I think it's really funny. So what about you, Jeannie? What's your number five?
My number five is Marie Antoinette.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. 2006, directed by Sofia Coppola with Kirsten Dunst and Jason Schwartzman. It's kind of a well-known story about, you know, this Austrian girl, really, who ends up becoming Queen of France just before the French Revolution and, you know, famously was insensitive to the needs of the working class people that she was the monarch for. But I just love the look of this movie. It has a very distinctive look where everything is done in these like really soft pastels. You just want to go to a bakery that is like set in the middle of this movie. I remember at the time it came out back in 2006, it was kind of like, you know, the top of like Paris Hilton at the peak of her popularity. And people were very critical of the film for just kind of being about Marie Antoinette doing nothing all day and sort of succumbing to her own celebrity. And I'm like, oh, but this is actually what's going on in our culture at this time. And I really feel like it almost was ahead of its time and kind of predicting this, you know, like look at me culture and people just kind of like being so introspective, they're not aware of the things that are going around them every day. And I think it really holds up. And I also love it's unique on my list in that it incorporates a very modern, like kind of a new wave soundtrack. Uh-huh. And I thought that was kind of a fun aspect to it.
That's really cool. I actually have not seen this. I need to get with it because I've heard good things, and it looks like it looks very unique and a lot of fun.
No, it is.
Yeah, I like it. And as long as you go into it realizing this is not going to be some deep historical lesson, but really just kind of a look at who Marie might have been, it's really fun.
Yeah. I kind of liked Mary, Queen of Scots this last year, kind of for that same, mm-hmm. like it is not historically accurate at all. And at all. I don't know. I just felt like the actresses were having enough fun and it was kind of silly enough and enjoyable. And it was just an escapism kind of thing.
Yeah. You will love that. It's right in the same line.
Very cool. Good pick. Okay. So Laura, what about what's your number five?
Okay. So all of my lists, I kind of went with the ones that I've just worn out rewatching versus maybe critically acclaimed. So number five for me is Emma, the Gwyneth Paltrow 1996 film. We all know the story about Emma, and it's kind of been redone, but what I just love about it is it's not a love triangle. It's kind of like I don't even know, like a love octagon, where we're just kind of all moving in this circle of love from one suitor to the next, and everyone kind of likes the same people. So I'm trying to think about, you know, Emma Woodhouse is the star of it, and she's basically a matchmaker, and she goes around matching people up, but ultimately realizes that, you know, she's been matching the object of her affection with other people, but that her heart is taken by him. Yeah. And I always love that kind of when love sneaks up on you in these stories, and in period pieces, I think that can often happen where they don't think that they like them, but then they realize ultimately that their heart is just burning, you know, for this person.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I really like Emma. It's the only book in Jane Austen, oddly enough, that has like any substantial romantic dialogue. Most of her books, if you really, cause we think, oh, her books are all about romance, but they're really not. They're about these women that have to make choices in their lives. And that was the big thing. I mean, that was the choice the women had in that day is who are they going to marry? Right. And so it's sometimes a little bit frustrating when I'm reading Jane Austen. It's like, Mr. Darcy said what was appropriate for a man deeply in love. And I'm like, no, I want to know what he said. Like,
yes. What are you thinking?
Yeah.
Yes. And I'm not a huge Gwyneth Paltrow fan per se, but this was back in the day where she was kind of the ingenue and she was, you know, sweet and innocent eyed. And there was something about her that I just think really worked in this role where she's kind of flitting about, trying to match people up. And then, you know, against, like you said, the society's rules and all of this proper formalities until she can finally really speak her mind on it.
Yeah, and she's a flawed character that grows. It's very dynamic through the story. She makes mistakes. She can be unlikable at times. She is definitely a better person by the end of the movie / book than at the beginning. And so that makes you engaged in the story, I think.
Yeah, I like to see that growth.
Plus, Alan Cummings as Mr. Elton is hilarious.
So good. So good, yes. Sometimes we like it just for even that one ancillary character, right?
Yeah, well, and then Mrs. Elton in that is hilarious.
Yeah, she is so good.
I don't know that actresses, but she does a great job.
Oh, yeah, and she shows up in a few different period pieces.
Yeah, she is hilarious.
Wonderful.
So good pick. That was one I watched. I came out when I was in high school, I believe, and that was one that was heavy on the rotation.
Oh, same. So. I had the VHS, if that dates me a little bit, in college, and I think I broke it because I would watch it over and over and over.
Yeah. Have you seen the most recent PBS version?
I started it, but now that you told me that, I never finished it.
How recent is it? Is it like about
2 years? I think, let me check. It has Johnny Lee Miller in it. And
Yes.
And I'm a big fan of his.
Yeah.
2009.
Yeah, yeah, I have seen it.
Yeah.
Back when, you know, Masterpiece did, they did a new adaptation of like most Jane Austen books.
Yeah. They did every single one except for Pride and Prejudice, because what do you do? It's been done as best as you can do it.
Yes. I agree. So, more on that topic later.
Yes.
Very, very good. I love that pick.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pie: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecasts.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
All right. Well, my number four is Howard's End.
Oh, so good.
That's my number four. It's a book that I love by Ian Forster, and it's a movie that I think is just about perfect. And what I think is so impressive about Howard's End is the way that every character, even very small characters, get a full arc and a full story. And I think that's what separates a good movie, where there's just a hero and the one character gets a full story, for a great movie is when something is so rich that just a minor character, you're invested in that character. And I think that they do a really great job, because the Schlegel sisters are just part of the story, and they, like, nobody is a villain in this movie. And it would be so easy to make the Wilcoxes just like these evil rich people, you know, that you see all the time, but they're not. And Henry Wilcox is not an evil man. He is a flawed man, but he's not. Yeah, he's not a wicked person. He's not a Scrooge. He's not a whatever. And I don't know. I love that. It just makes it so interesting to me. And I think it's very moving to follow each one of the characters and their experience. And it's all kind of anchored by this house, you know, this Howard's End, and how kind of symbolic that is of wealth and of their different, because you've got the Schlegels are kind of this this idealized version of the Schlegel sisters are kind of in a, what would you call, like an educated first class kind of people, that they think they know what's best for kind of everybody. They think they know what the Wilcoxes should be doing. They think they know what the Bash should be doing. And they have all these philosophies, but they're not, they're very protected. So they can easily live off of these philosophies and off of these things and have this idealistic view. Because the Wilcoxes, they, as the elites, have to make choices they're accountable for, but then also the Bass, on the other hand, are pay the price of those choices. And anyway, and I just love Emma Thompson, incredible, Helena Bonham Carter, Anthony Hopkins. He has a scene in the movie that makes me cry every time. And he's a character that should be very unlikable, but I'm invested. And I think Vanessa Redgrave's incredible in it. Merchant and Ivory, they were incredible in that era in the 90s. And the whole thing looks beautiful and lush. And I don't know, I just love the characters. I think it is such a rich, beautiful movie. And so if you haven't seen it, definitely check it out.
I think we've both seen it.
Yeah, it was on our honorable mentions. I mean, it really deserved probably to be higher now that you're talking about it. It's a moving one. It really is. It's deeply moving.
Yeah. It's just a great script. And it's probably because it's just a great book. I just love it. So, so Ginny, what is your next one? Next choice.
So I'm going to admit that Laura and I have the same number four.
Yes. And okay, good.
We were originally going to do a single list. And then we couldn't decide who could have this one.
Good. Yes.
We wanted to do one Hallmark movie. We were inspired by your recent Sarah Jane and Paul, or Sarah Plain and Paul.
That's the sequel, Sarah Jane.
You know, a podcast. And so it's an older Hallmark Hall of Fame. I don't think you've ever mentioned it. My apologies if you have. It's The Magic of Ordinary Days from 2005.
Yeah.
With Carrie Russell and Skeet Ulrich and Mary Winningham.
Yeah. I don't think we ever really have mentioned it. We certainly haven't reviewed it anyway. So it's a great choice.
This is a family fave. We just love it. I mean, you would think the title right away, so you're like, Ordinary Days, no thanks, I live it every day. But that's what makes it so beautiful. It's all in the title. It's really slow moving, but there's something about that it just kind of builds this relationship. I don't know if you want to go into the plot a little, but.
You know, it's set in like kind of like the World War II post-war area. It does have a subplot about some friends that Carrie Russell, who's the lead, makes, who are in a nearby internment camp. But it's a little different than the modern Hallmark movie because it deals with an issue, which is that, you know, she is an unwed, soon-to-be mother. She's pregnant, and her father, who is some sort of minister, essentially conspires with a minister in a small town to marry her off to this simple farmer, who agrees to it and agrees to raise the child as his own. And she's disappointed because she's been to college and she really envisioned this kind of cosmopolitan life for herself as an archaeologist. And literally, they are on this farm, and unlike, like, you know, like the modern Hallmark movie where the farm is just gorgeous, you know, this is a place that it looks kind of desolate, and you know, and she just has to kind of adapt to the fact that this is her new life. And for a while she pines for her the father of her child, who never shows up. He's a great character that never shows up, so we can hate him unabated. And eventually falls in love with the farmer and realizes the beauty in this like simple life.
Yeah. I mean, we're suckers for arranged marriage. I know that if someone actually arranged my marriage, I may have a different opinion, but I mean, how can you not root for characters who are married from the get-go, you know?
Yeah.
And we see this again, even sometimes in, you know, modern films, this trope is kind of pulled out, whether it's like, I woke up in Vegas married, but it's kind of neat to see you start from that place and then kind of work backwards where, you know, it's really building and there's no reason you shouldn't be together. You're already married, but you're in separate bedrooms or you're not sure how you feel about each other. And there's kind of loyalty and duty and just kind of a pure connection there. And it's really beautiful. And I have a couple of friends who've had arranged marriages in other cultures, and sometimes it really does work out beautifully.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm 38 and single, so it doesn't sound as bad as now as it might have been.
I am as well, and I agree, but only, you know, if it's Skeet Ulrich.
Hey, I've been married for 15 years, and I'll tell you what, I kind of feel like an arranged marriage has just as good of a chance after you've been through it. You think at the end of the day, you're just waking up and making breakfast, right? So, but it's a really good one for people who have, and I don't know what it is. It's kind of like watching paint dry a little bit, and yet you just feel super moved by it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such a great choice. I really wish that Hallmark would do another period piece as part of Hallmark Hall of Fame. It just feels like lately the Hallmark Hall of Fames have been slightly gussied up Hallmark movies, like just a little bit better cast, a little bit more budget. But it'd be really cool if they really set it apart like they used to, and made it something very different in feel. That I'm more, I'm gonna talk a little bit later, but I would love for them to do like a Little Women, to do an Anne of Green Gables, something like that would be really cool. I mean, it would be really cool if they did like a traditional Dickensian Christmas Carol. That would be amazing.
Yes, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oh, and
they would knock it out of the park. I really think they would. And yeah, they have in the past. Some of these Hallmark Hall of Fames hold up to these, you know, big budget period.
Yeah. Piece. Yeah. I think so, for sure. So that's a great choice for sure. So Laura, what is your, what, oh wait, you both had it as yours.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's right. No, that's fine.
Anymore I can chime in on that, except to say that I guess there was supposed to be a sequel. It was greenlit and everything. So I don't know, Hallmark, if you can get those people now, they have Emmys and,
and are under contract. They have to do it.
They have to do it.
Maybe. But very cool. I like that choice. All right. Well, my third choice is a Best Picture winner, and it is Amadeus.
I was hoping someone would do it.
So what I think is so brilliant about Amadeus, it's fiction. It's not accurate to what really happened as far as we know. But what I think is so brilliant about it is that it's this conversation about the frustration of, you know, you work so hard at something, and yet here's somebody who comes along who's just naturally just better than you, and it doesn't even matter. You could work, Salieri could work his whole life, and he did, and he would never be as good as Mozart. And Salieri is, he blames God on this. He says, how could you bestow these gifts upon a buffoon? How could that be? And he lets this envy that he feels for Mozart just eat at him and eat at him until he's basically ends up murdering him. And he justifies it as this revenge against God. And I think that's really interesting. When I reviewed the movie Whiplash, which I like, fine. But I think it's an interesting, I used Amadeus as a counter example, because in Whiplash it's assumed that people from their experience and from their, how they are trained and how they are taught and everything like that is the defining characteristic between good music and great music, mm-hmm. right? And so it justifies all this terrible behavior, which is crazy. Mm-hmm. Amadeus is kind of saying the reverse, that it doesn't matter how hard, you know, you're trained or taught or what, you know, happens. It's just, you either got it or you don't have it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that for the most part, that's probably more true, I think. Yeah. That there's just some people that have got it, some people that don't. And I love the sequences in this movie where he's reading the music, and he starts to kind of play it in his head, and it just takes his breath away. I think all those scenes are done so well. And I think that they managed to make both Salieri and Mozart very interesting characters, and very, you know, on one hand, he's just like this easy buffoon, Mozart, but then you see these more heartbreaking moments, and I know, I just love it. I think it truly is a masterpiece of a movie. I love all the opera scenes, are incredible. So yeah, it's one of my favorite Best Picture winners.
Agreed. It's fantastic, and costume game and powdered wigs are strong in that movie.
And it holds up. It holds up to the test of time, and that it's still relevant to today.
Yeah, and the Best Picture winners in the 80s are a little hit and miss, I'll tell you that right now. But this is definitely...
There was some behind the scenes pay.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I'm not a fan of Terms of Endearment myself. Ooh, the movie's rough for me. But yeah, but this one is great. And it looks great. It was all filmed in Prague, which is a very old feeling city, because it was never really modernized the way that, because of the communists and that, you know, the Russians that were ruling at that time. And so it just has this old feel to it, and it just gives an added dimension. So anyway, I love it. And so Jeannie, what's your number three?
It's also from the 1980s, and I believe it was Best Foreign Film winner at the Oscars. Don't quote me on that. Cinema Paradiso.
Oh, it's a good one.
So this Great is one. An Italian film, but probably one of the better known foreign films here in the United States. And it's a post-World War II. It's set in a... I'm cheating a little, because some of the movie is set in modern times, or modern to the point at which it was filmed. But the majority of it occurs in a flashback in post-World War II in a small Italian village. And it's a fatherless boy befriends the guy who runs the local movie theater, the projector. And when that man, whose name is Alfredo, is blinded in a movie theater accident due to the old film they were using, he trains the boy to help him run the movie theater. And it's just it's a great coming of age story. It's a great kind of mentor story, if you're into mentor stories like Good Will Hunting or something like that, the love between this boy and this older man. And then it's also just a great testament to film, you know. And there's this fantastic montage at the end of the film where over the years in the Italian movie theater, the local priest was able to censor the movies, and he had them, you know, physically cut out of the projection reel, all of the kissing scenes and all of the movies they were showing. And when Alfredo finally dies, at this point, Salvatore, the boy, is a famous filmmaker, and he returns to the village for the funeral, and Alfredo's widow gives him a reel, and the reel is all of the kissing scenes spliced back together. And it's just, you do not have a heart if you can watch that movie and see that scene and not just like really get it in the gut. I'm not a big crier in movies, but that one gets me every time.
Yeah. That's such a great choice. And it has such potential to be really cloying, but because there's nothing, obviously it's going to win Best Foreign Film, because there's nothing in Hollywood likes more than movies about how great movies are and how great Hollywood is. But it's just such a sweet, lovely little movie, very touching, about how I think anything any dream that you have can really carry you through the tough times of life, whether it's movies or whatever.
I agree. And
yeah,
it does border on cloying, but I just, for me, I saw it recently after having not seen it many, many years. And I was like, you know what? I still love it. I don't care.
Yeah, I agree. I did. I'll put a link over on my other channel. I did. We did a whole podcast on it for a show I used to do called Chicks on Flicks. And so I'll put a link down to that. Yeah, it's a really good movie. It's just so heartfelt and sweet. And yeah, good choice.
Well, and Jenny, back in her pre-attorney days, actually, you know, you graduated in film and worked in the film industry in Hollywood. So I remember just, I don't know, when you're talking about actual old-time film, you worked in that for a bit and had some background in the movie theaters actually splicing film.
And I think that, Rachel, you should have a shared background with us, where we went to a school that for a while would actually cut scenes out of studies.
All right. She had the job of cutting out, you know, questionable scenes, but she had to watch them over and over to do so.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. I forgot that. Yeah, we all have the same alma mater. So
yes.
Woo! Go Cougars. Yeah. Very good. So, Alara, what is your number three?
Okay, so I have three kids, three girls, 12, 9, and 7. And so I had to go with a family one that kind of breaks period piece tradition, which is Nanny McPhee. I love this movie. Technically, it counts. It's a little bit outside the box because it's a fantasy. It's a comedy. But it does have Emma Thompson, which I think is a stamp of approval, and Colin Firth. So what more can you want? But this movie is actually super sweet as well as funny. It's about it's set in 1880s Victorian England, and there's a widow who has seven unruly children. Colin Firth is this widow, and he's mourning the loss of his wife. His kids are out of control. You know, one of them tells the nanny to call him Bosoms McGee, so you know that they're just not falling in line with the proper society. And it evolves. He ends up getting engaged to just a terrible woman that you don't want him to be with, and then slowly comes around to realize that his scullery maid, who he is kind of depended on to help the kids, that he has fallen in love with her.
Yeah.
And it's really quite sweet at the end, and also hilarious. And we quote it a lot at our house. So if you haven't seen it, again, sets kind of like Marie Antoinette, everything is just done in bold colors. Emma Thompson with her warts that slowly fade. She's very Mary Poppins. You know, she uses a hint of magic but is always very proper. So I really enjoy this film, and I think that it also can be rewatched over and over.
Yeah, it is really, really fun. I really like, you know, just Emma Thompson's the best in that film. I mean, I love Mary Poppins, and I loved Mary Poppins Returns so much. And so it's definitely a trope that just works for me. So I think it's a really interesting choice. I wouldn't have thought of that one. But
yeah, it kind of came to me last minute where I was just thinking of what are the ones that I watch over now. I thought, you know what? I love it, and I'm going to put it in and come at me.
So. Very good. All right. I love that. And and Colin Firth, so good in that. Very sweet. So yeah, he needs to pay more attention to people. It was Love Actually. He's just like completely clueless.
He's made a career out of being clueless about love. But you know what? We love it. We like him fumbling through it.
I mean, it's like Bridget Jones. He's like, get it together, man. Mm-hmm. But anyway, very good. All right. Well, my number two is another Best Picture winner. It's Lawrence of Arabia.
All right.
And Lawrence of Arabia, I'd heard so much about it, and I was like, oh, it's so long. What am I going to want to watch this movie? And then I watched it for an episode of this old show, Chicks on Flicks, that we did. And I was blown away. Not only is it, of course, the cinematography and the music and the acting, all incredible. It may be the best cinematography ever in the history of movies. It's certainly in the conversation for sure. But I actually think that Lawrence is a very, very engaging character. He is so, there's times when he's very infuriating. There's times when he's foppish and just kind of irritating. There's times when you just love him, and he's just so layered, and he's so interesting, and I loved just following his story. And so it manages to be big and epic at the same time of being very, like, very a character piece and about him. And I loved it. I walked away being like, that is a movie that is worthy of the hype. It's as good as people say it is, in my opinion. It's not one of those old movies where you're like, yeah, it's not that great. I don't know. I absolutely love Lawrence of Arabia. I mean, there's some like brown face stuff that's not maybe the best, but other than that, I think it's pretty close to perfect. I mean, there's scenes where he gets like assaulted and you're really shocked and horrified for him and you're really feeling for him. Then there's really funny scenes. He's just such an engaging, wonderful, dynamic character. And I just think it's great.
Yeah.
I had a bad experience with that movie when I was in college. I worked at a college television station, and we were airing the Lawrence of Arabia, and I was working the master control board, and the other student who had set up the tapes skipped a reel of it. And it was one of the worst nights of my life because we couldn't go back and show it, because then we would have been showing parts of it twice and that would have violated our license. And there were a lot of crawls across the screen and then like extra episodes of Little House on the Prairie at the end to make up for the time. And
oh no,
haven't been able to watch it since.
And a lot of angry elderly people.
Yes. Yes.
I would be angry. I'm like, where's the rest of the movie? It's so good.
It would throw me off.
We skipped a part in the middle. So.
Oh no.
That's some of those epics, though, they're really great. And I don't know. Yeah. I feel like there's a lot of long movies these days, but they don't do the same sweeping storytelling.
They get the epicness, but then they forget the characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
To make the characters compelling.
Yeah. You know, not character.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So, all right, Jenny, what's your number two?
Oh, my number two, you know, I have another Merchant Ivory E.M. Forster adaptation. I'm sure you can guess what it is. Yeah. Which is 1985's Room with a View.
Oh, so good.
This is something that, you know, when I was in college, we watched over and over again. And I was thinking about it, you know, it's about Helena Bonham Carter is Lucy Honeychurch, and she's engaged to Daniel Day-Lewis.
Who is hilarious.
One of my favorite roles of him in a lifetime of fantastic roles.
Yeah, but
he's a little prim and not very fun. And, you know, she's on vacation with her aunt, who's Maggie Smith. They meet Judy Dench, who's this like kind of crazy author. And she falls in love with the eccentric George Emerson, who's played by Julian Sands. And you're definitely voting for this relationship. But, you know, now that I'm older, sometimes I look back and I'm like, I think maybe Cecil would have been a better choice for us. He just seems like George is almost too quirky, and you're going to have a lot of, you know, awkward moments being married to this man. But still, I just, you know, I've seen it so many times that it's almost lost its effect. But, you know, the first time I saw it, you just think it's the most romantic movie you've ever seen, because he just sees her across the field and runs and kisses her. Oh. And probably one of the best kissing scenes ever in a movie.
For sure. Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it definitely is one of my favorite kissing scenes for sure in a movie. And yeah, I think Daniel Day-Lewis, what he does with that little tiny part is he takes a character that you should kind of hate, that's just like this shallow, but you actually kind of feel sorry for him by the end of it, because I don't know, there's just something, there's a layer there. Which
I agree. To the point that in my old age, I'm questioning her choice. Right.
Yeah. Oh, that's a really good one. I'm glad that you picked it. It is technically rated R, but it's really stupid rated R. It's just for just for one scene, skinny dipping scene at the very beginning, which isn't even like, it's so stupid.
It's
so
not
just fast forward that part and you're fine.
I agree with that. I even forget it has that scene because I think, you know, just go past it.
That's right. Very, very good pick. I love that. So Laura, what's your number two?
Okay. I may or may not be stealing your thunder here, but I'm going with Little Women. This is the 1994 version. Obviously been tons of Little Women done. And you know, when you name this cast, Winona Ryder, Claire Danes, you've got Christian Bale, you have Kirsten Dunst again, and Samantha Mathis. I mean, all sorts of people in this, and you might think, how does that work? At the time that it came out, I remember thinking these are all these kind of, you know, indie, edgy people, and yet it's beautiful. It's really well done, and we've watched it so many times, and as sisters, writers, this one really speaks to me. I just love the way they build the family dynamic and the way that your affections shift over time, because of course you have Meg, Joe, Beth, and Amy, and you know, Megan is so proper, but she falls in love. Joe thinks that she knows what she wants, but it changes over time as she matures, and it's just really beautiful to me. And so we all know the story of it, but what's ultimately the best message for me is just kind of enduring love and family.
Yeah, I love Little Women, and I think that is by far the Well, I know the one with Kath Hepburn is really good too, but those two are definitely by far and away the best versions of Little Women. I love that 1994 version, and they do a really good job making you feel like, what is she doing? Why is she saying no to Lori? You know, because it's Christian Bale, and it's just the way they do it is really good. I think the worst version, well, I really hated last year, there was a modernized version.
Oh, yeah.
Where they made...
It was a miss for me.
Did you see it?
I did. It was a miss for me.
Yeah. Huge miss. I just thought they made Joan such a jerk. I mean, she's always a little bit, obviously, independent, a little bit selfish, but, like, it was the only time I've ever seen a version where I was like, yeah, you burn her book because she's a jerk and she doesn't deserve it.
Yeah.
She's mean. And I didn't like it. And then also there was a bad version last year on PBS that was a traditional version. Mm-hmm. It had Angela Lansbury, who was amazing, but I found it a lot of their choices very weird and I didn't really like it. So those kind of experiences make me feel like, wow, that movie, the 1994 version, is really good because you've seen all these people try to do it and do it badly. And I love the music in it. I love all the costuming is great. All the performances are pretty much great. I'm not a huge fan of, I think it's Samantha Mathis is the older Amy.
Yeah, I don't love the older Amy either. I don't know what it is about it, but it didn't quite nail the connection. She felt maybe not right for him.
Yeah.
Chemistry wise.
Yeah. But I love the ending, where they're in the rain and I've got such small hands. Not empty now. That's really good.
They're not empty now. I know. And I quote this movie a lot and I've introduced it to my own girls. And I think it really teaches lessons on heartbreak and growing up. And you can really feel that pain and think, what? And then you see how something better comes along. And that happens a lot in life and love.
Yeah.
But you really can get short-sighted in those younger years. So that part's beautiful to me. But yeah, there's a lot of things. And Beth, oh, my dear Beth, you know. And
oh my gosh.
Why does everybody, want to leave? And she's so happy to stay. I think about that often.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Beth. Oh, I remember when I first read that and I was just devastated. I was so sad.
Well, I know.
But it's so good. And it just reminds you that everybody is fighting different battles and everybody's valuable in a family. It's great. Very good choice.
All right.
Well, my number one is very exciting. It's a little bit of a cheat because it's not technically a movie, but I think it feels cinematic. I think it's a movie. Is Anne of Green Gables, 1985. It was one of the first, and it was the first thing that Amber and I ever podcasted about. Was getting ready for Anne with an E, which, I think that this is perfect. It's so great. The casting is so great. The way that they capture both the sort of tragedy of Anne and but then also the hopefulness that even in her darkest times, she has this, she's creating window friends. She's making her imagination kind of safer from these hard experiences that she's had, and as she kind of learns to be sort of loved, and as Marilla also learns to be loved by Anne, and that's just such a sweet, lovely relationship, and their characters are very dynamic and they grow, and Matthew is just like the perfect person. He's so just, you can't not love Matthew. He's incredible. And I love all the casting in this. I love the music. I love I love Gilbert in this. He's amazing.
We all do.
Just the second one isn't as good. It doesn't hold up as well as this one. But I don't know. I just love it. So it's my number one.
That's a great one. I think to, you know, our generation, at least, that is Anne of Green Gables.
Oh, yeah.
You know, like, I saw it, and then I read the books.
Oh, yeah, and Anne, I read all the Anne of Green Gables books, and man, I was an Anne. I lived in my imaginary world and had my own rules and my own drama in my head, and yes. It was so fun to read about someone who took life that way.
Yeah.
I really felt understood as a wacky six-year-old.
That's such a great pick.
Yeah. Well, all right, Jenny, what's your number one? It's very exciting.
I'm not going to go too into it. You've already had a whole podcast on this, but I just have to go with the 2005 Pride and Prejudice, the Keira Knightley version, directed by Joe Wright. I want to be clear that I love the Colin Firth, Mr. Darcy. And it took me a long time. I went to this back in 2005 with low expectations. It has become my favorite version, and I stand by that. I love the look of it. I love how their house is kind of dirty. The Bennett's house is kind of dirty and chaotic. Just the way that it would be. And I just really like it. And I also like Jo Malone's my favorite Lydia, which is one of my favorite characters in the book.
Yes. Oh, interesting. Favorite, huh? Yeah. She's really good. They're all really good. It's a really interesting version because they kind of, as opposed to being sort of stuck up and pretentious, they play Darcy as being just kind of shy. He's just sort of quiet and
I think
awkward.
It's such an iconic performance by Colin Firth that Matthew McFadden probably just had to find something different while still being true to the source material. And he did a great job. You know, I really like him as an actor. But I agree. It's a little bit of a different interpretation of Darcy. Where I do think he's shy and awkward, but I think that we're supposed to believe that Elizabeth and the rest of the world that they live in really takes this as being arrogant instead.
Right. Yeah. It's really good and beautifully filmed. And you can tell that the emphasis was on Lizzie's growth and changing, I think, because Keira Knightley was the star, as opposed to most of the time, it's the Darcy character that does most of the changing and growing. But they took a different approach, and I appreciate that. I really like it. So very good choice. All right, Laura, what is your
number? Okay, final one. As you can tell, I like Emma Thompson. I went with Sense and Sensibility.
This
is one that I can watch over and over. 1995. It's got Emma Thompson and Kate Winslet, who I don't necessarily love Kate Winslet in this, but that's what works for me because she's like both unlikable and likable. And at the end of the day, it reminds you again of this whole sisterhood family relationship. There's these three sisters, and Emma Thompson is, you know, kind of the spinster, and you just root for all of them in different ways. You see the different place they're at in their life. Hugh Grant is in this. And of course, Emma Thompson's character, you know, Eleanor, just doesn't think it's possible to be with him. Ultimately things change, but the yearning, you can feel it through the screen. And why do we like Hugh Grant? I don't know. Every character he plays, there's the standoffishness to him, but somehow you just root for Hugh in these movies. And when they come together, and it's really nice. And of course the story, Kate Winslet's character, you know, falls in love with Willoughby and really is convinced that she loves this dashing young man. And he turns out to not necessarily betray her, but she thinks they're going to get together and that she'll be proposed to. And he ends up having gotten someone pregnant and has to
scandalous
breaks her heart more than anything, and then she turns around her affections. Alan Rickman, so good in this, as Colonel Brandon, and she ultimately realizes that he is someone who will be there for her and who loves her. And again, a different kind of love. There's the hot lusty love, and then there's the stable, secure, enduring love, and that's what she ends up finding. And so It makes me swoon.
Yeah, it's so good. I absolutely love it. It's got some weird casting, but it actually ends up, I think, working. Like, I would never have thought to cast Hugh Grant as this sort of awkward, shy, you know, sort of pushover character. Like, he's typically your leading man, your, you know, kind of, I don't know, just different than that. And so, but it works. It just works. And, you know, I think Alan Rickman's kind of weird casting, but it works. It's great. It makes it memorable, I think. And I love the ending of that movie when she just starts to ugly cry.
Oh yes.
Like, that's so good, because I don't know, I think most directors wouldn't make that choice, and it just makes it feel very human. And she bottling all this up, and all of a sudden she's
like all those years of just kind of pushing it down, and now she's so relieved. I love that scene too.
Yeah, so good. Well, very good. This has been a lot of fun. I think if you watched all of these movies, you'd have a pretty amazing time.
Oh yeah.
It would be pretty good.
I think these are good entry too for people who might be scared of period pieces.
Yeah.
All of these have storylines that are interesting and you can be drawn in even if you're not a history buff.
Yeah.
Like costume.
Oh, well, and quite a bit of variety. Everything from Nanny McPhee to, you know, Lawrence of Arabia. That's there's more variety than you think in this era. And so let's go over our list really quick. So for me, I have Love and Friendship at number 5. I have Howard's End at 4, Amadeus at 3, Lawrence of Arabia at 2, and Anne of Green Gables at number 1. So Ginny, what's your list?
I have Marie Antoinette at 5, The Magic of Ordinary Days at number 4, Cinema Paradiso at number 3, Room with a View at number 2, and Pride and Prejudice at number 1.
Great list. All right.
Number 5, Emma, and number 4 also, I have The Magic of Ordinary Days, 3, Nanny McPhee, 2, Little Women, and number 1, Sense and Sensibility.
Very great. Well, thank you guys so much for coming on. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
No, this is great to share Hallmark and period pieces in common. It's a rare find, I think.
Yeah.
You're in spirits now.
Well, we'll definitely have you back on again. This was really fun. And where can people find you on social media and all that fun stuff?
We're on Twitter at Sander Sisters. And you can pretty much just wait to find us on a television near you. So
yeah. Get these scripts, Hallmark.
Right. Yes. You know who you are, who are reading them.
Very good. So you can find me at Rachel's Reviews on iTunes and on YouTube, all of our social media. Really appreciate you checking that out. And make sure you're following the podcast, Hallmarkies Pod, all over the place. And if you're listening on iTunes, if you can give us your ratings and reviews, we really appreciate it. And if you're listening on or watching on YouTube, just give us a thumbs up and a subscription. We really appreciate that as well. And if you have any ideas for what you would like our next top 5 for April to be, please let us know. We would love to hear your suggestions. So thanks so much, you guys, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.